Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Two recent events in the news have shaken the heavy metal world. One was the death of guitarist Jeff Hanneman of this band, Slayer. The other, the arrest of the lead singer of the Christian metal band, As I Lay Dying. He was charged with trying to hire a hitman to kill his wife. Now you may think, well, just an unlucky week for metal. But if you read the new book, Louder Than Hell, by John Wiederhorn and Catherine Turman, you might think again. The book is full of the proverbial sex and drugs and rock and roll, but also lots of untimely death and even murder and arson. John and Catherine are both here.
Thank you, guys.
Welcome. Thanks for having us.
So, Catherine, was it an unusually bad week last week, or is this kind of par for the course in the metal world?
No, I think it, you know, there's the old saying, celebrity deaths come in threes, so I hope, you know, that isn't the case. I mean, last week also, ironically, was the biggest happy event in metal, which is the Revolver Golden Gods Awards, and that was actually, sadly, the day that Jeff Hanneman from Slayer passed away. So it cast kind of a big pall over the event, which was in L.A., and most bands did tributes to him that evening.
Well, you know, when it comes to death and darkness and stuff, I mean, how much of this, John, is part and parcel of the whole image and iconography that's associated with metal?
Well, metal is a music style which is really about rebellion and, you know, about angst and teenage frustration. A lot of darkness does go along with that. You know,
so that dark imagery, that's part of metal from the beginning.
I would say so, yes. But, I mean, in our book, you know, we interview Sabbath and all the kind of originators from England, and they really say, you know, we're not satanic. Our name Black Sabbath is from a movie. You know, all of it is showmanship. There are some bands, they're generally the lesser known bands, who, yes, had, you know, read the Satanic Bible, mm-hmm. or seriously into Aleister Crowley. But a lot of the bands, no, it was just a dark imagery.
It's like a horror film, really.
Yeah.
A lot of the iconography and a lot of the approach is about extremism on a strictly fantasy level, and it's a great escape, I think, for a lot of kids.
Well, and to go back to the beginning, I mean, you know, the first Black Sabbath album, there are several people in the interviews in your book where people are pointing not just to Black Sabbath, but to the song Black Sabbath, the title track with that tritone, which is still pretty chilling after all these years. Here's a little bit, the title track from that first album by the band Black Sabbath.
Finger in black, which points at me. Turn around quick and start to run.
Song Black Sabbath from the band Black Sabbath, from their first album that came out in 1970, also called Black Sabbath. We are speaking with John Wiederhorn and Catherine Turman, the authors of Louder Than Hell, The Definitive Oral History of Metal. So it is exactly what the subtitle says. It's an oral history told mostly through the words of the musicians and some other people. It seems like you did at some point speak to everybody, including a number of people who are no longer with us.
Right. Well, fortunately, we've both been doing this for, you know, 20 years, so we did have a backlog of material and were able to tap into interviews from 10, 15 years ago.
Well, what's interesting is, you know, when you have, you know, person A saying, you know, recounting a story from a concert or backstage or whatever happens, and then person B comes along, very often they will sort of corroborate the story, but sometimes they'll contradict it. No, that's not what happened.
I think more than sometimes. I think every band has its own sort of mythology, and people have their own places in it. And I think we talked to Rob Zombie. He's like, you know, this is a book where I say something and my other bandmate contradicts me. And that's pretty much how it is.
Right. So a definitive oral history does not necessarily mean a definitive history. It's just, it's these are the memories of the players on the scene.
I think it would probably be impossible to get a history, I guess, unless you went back and looked at the footage of every concert and had chronicled everything. It's
right.
Sort of impossible to capture every moment. I mean, even the autobiographies that so many bands are doing these days, from Motley Crue to Dave Mustaine, you know, lots of stuff is held back. Lots of stuff is hedgy.
Right. Now, Catherine, you mentioned Motley Crue, which brings us to that part of the story of metal where metal becomes big business in the 1980s with the hair bands and stuff. That always seemed to me to be kind of antithetical to what metal was. You know, as John said before, it's about extremism. And, you know, if you were extremist, how were you going to be a multi-platinum artist filling arenas?
Well, I think you're going to be extreme in the amount you drink and the amount of girls that you have sex with. It's a different kind of extreme, more hedonistic, less obviously dark, less intellectual. And all those bands also, they had their hits with ballads. That's kind of what makes a hair metal band hair metal. But a lot of them did have harder sides, I think. But as you say, they definitely became known for their Every Rose Has Its Thorn poison sort of thing.
Well, so what would be, the band Quiet Riot, you know, they were sort of pivotal in the kind of in pushing metal to this next stage, right?
Well, especially because their guitarist, Randy Rhoads, went on to, you know, play with Ozzy and tragically died young. So he was kind of one of the first metal, you know, after
Guitar
Eddie Van Halen.
Heroes, yeah.
Yeah.
Quiet Riot is the name of the band. And the song Metal Health, subtitled Bang Your Head, a big hit for this band. That is Quiet Riot, featuring the late guitarist Randy Rhoads, and Metal Health, subtitled Bang Your Head. So we're looking at a time in the development of metal where it's like this big thing, it's part of our common cultural currency, and then it begins fracturing and splintering, and, you know, you end up with all these different concurrent developments that take you in different places. Was the thrash, was that a kind of a turning point in the story of metal?
I would say it was the first biggest splinter in metal.
And what is thrash? How would you define that?
Well, what's interesting is right before thrash, you had a movement called the New Wave of British Heavy Metal.
Mm-hmm.
And that brought bands like Judas Priest and Iron Maiden, Saxon, Angel Witch. And there were some people in the States who just didn't like hair metal, didn't identify it with it all, and thought it was poppy and cheesy. So they were listening to punk rock and a lot of these bands coming out of Europe, mostly England. Prime amongst them, really, was Lars Ulrich, the drummer for Metallica.
Who's Danish.
Who's Danish and who had access to a lot of his European stuff. He was from a fairly wealthy family and was frequently overseas, and he introduced a lot of this music to some of his friends and people who he was playing with, and long and short of it is Metallica was born. 21, only son, but he's And what they were able to do was combine the technical flourishes and the aggression of the new wave of British heavy metal bands with a punk rock speed. It really, on a musical level, upped the ante on what had been heard before in terms of aggression and in terms of lyrical content and heaviness.
So how was it different from the hardcore punk scene where, you know, the music would be that sort of a machine gun tempo?
Well, the tempos were fairly similar, but the music was tighter. And while a lot of punk and hardcore relies on guitar playing with sort of open chords, metal relied more on palm muting, and as you'd get a very rapid chug. There's a lot of
staccato riffing.
And, of course, guitar solos, which punk you didn't really get
fast
so much.
Ones.
Right. And then beyond that, lyrical content was not political. It was much, much more about violence, you know, abusive upbringings, war, Satan.
The good stuff.
as in this song called Bonded by Blood, title track from the same album by the band Exodus. Bit of mid-80s thrash metal from the band Exodus, title track from their album Bonded by Blood. Here in the Soundcheck studio, we're speaking with John Wiederhorn and Catherine Turman, the authors of Louder Than Hell. And once we start doing this, once we start talking about speed metal and thrash and doom metal, we're down the rabbit hole, you know, where there's like a gazillion subspecies of metal and the fans of each have staked their territory and jealously guarded and stuff. How do you deal with that in this oral history?
Darts at a dartboard.
Yeah.
No, it's after thrash, it was pretty clear how the subdivisions took place. Every band wanted to upstage the next band. Every genre wanted to be heavier than the one that preceded it. So you go from thrash metal to death metal. Death metal, as its title implies, deals with mostly subjects about death, dying, killing serial killers. The vocals are much harsher and less intelligible. And
is that where we get the Cookie Monster vocal style?
That's where the Cookie Monster screams come, absolutely.
Versus, of course, nu metal, which was kind of the melding of rap and metal, which, you know, you've got your Limp Bizkits and your Korns, and that's a scene that sort of, unlike a lot of the others, nu metal has sort of died down or morphed into something different. No one wants to be called that anymore, yet people are still proud to be thrash, black.
Right. Now, woe betide the outsider who mistakenly calls a death metal band a black metal band. How do you distinguish between the two?
Death metal and black metal have a lot of similarities. But what separates the two is, again, that one-upsmanship. Black metal takes the speed and ferocity of death metal and approaches it in a different way, because these death metal bands were trying to sound as good as they could with the best equipment that they could and really hired producers, mostly in Florida. That's where it was known, because there was a
Morris Sound Studios.
Right, a great studio, Morris Sound. So they found a way to make this insanely fast music listenable and the instruments definable. So black metal says, this sounds too good. We want music that sounds more raw, more vicious. We want to sound less professional. So these guys use production techniques that make it sound like their tape recorder is in the bottom of a well.
Mm.
And
so give me an example of death metal. Who would be a good example of death metal? And then maybe we can play a little black metal as well.
Sure.
Death.
They were
arguably the first.
Chuck Schuldiner.
All right, so let's hear a little bit of death, and then you want to hear some of Mayhem to represent the black metal side of things?
Sure, that's a good.
So the first is death metal, the second is black metal. There won't be a test on this, but...
There's no brown metal.
Okay, so there is your A-B test, death metal and black metal, the former represented by the band Death, and a song called Born Dead. Yes, that is death metal all the way. And then representing the black metal side of things, the band Mayhem with Freezing Moon. We are talking with John Wiederhorn and Catherine Turman, the authors of the new book, Louder Than Hell, The Definitive Oral History of Metal. And I got to say, black metal always makes good copy. You know, the story of the Norwegians, the band Borzum, with the one musician murdering the other and the arson and all that kind of stuff. So some of these people do take the whole image, Catherine, pretty seriously. It's not just entertainment. It's not just a show.
Correct. And yeah, there's cannibalism in our book. I mean... band members eating other musicians. I have to think that is taken seriously. And it's definitely a lot more rivalry than in other genres. You know, the factions were against each other. Some instances in the book, you know, the guys were very homophobic, which led to violence.
So what is the scene? I mean, what is the current state of the art? Please tell me we don't still have musicians killing and eating each other.
Well, see, these people... we're very, very young and impressionable, and I'm not giving them an out because what they did was horrific. There were, you know, numerous church burnings and several murders, including, like we said, band members killing other band members.
Most notably, Euronymous.
Euronymous was killed by the singer or the frontman from Burzum, Varg Vikernes, in a horrific event. And what's interesting, though, is as much as today's black metal bands will say, oh, that was so long ago, that's not important, it really did put black metal on the map on an international level.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a bittersweet event for the genre in that respect. It wasn't so good for Euronymous. But the thing about black metal is it's a very credible form of metal. A lot of these guys are extremely talented. You know, they can play at insanely fast speeds, and there are a lot of tempo shift changes and everything. So content-wise, things are different now than they were then.
Mm-hmm.
These guys aren't criminals anymore. I mean, Faust, who went to jail for murder, he was in the band Emperor. He's now in a band, Aborim, who are an excellent industrial black metal band. And
yet another subgenre.
Right.
That was something difficult about the book, to know where to end it, because new bands are always coming out, and then John's like, well, there's this new genre.
Right.
I can't remember what it was. I'm like,
was
it's printing.
It gent? Or
No, it wasn't gent, which is D-J-E-N-T.
I don't know what that
is. It's European as...
Yeah, gent is a music which is very technically intricate. jazzy, but with very rapid beats and rhythms, and involves really low-tuned eight-string guitar noise. So it's Periphery is a band on that.
I think the favorite genre we didn't really cover in the book was crabcore. That's just my favorite
term.
Just
a trend.
Crabcore.
All right, crabcore is a bridge too far.
Yes. All right.
I'm calling an end to this. We're going to play a little Periphery, a little djent music from Periphery to wrap things up. John Wiederhorn, Catherine Turman, Louder Than Hell, the definitive oral history of metal. Thank you both for being with us.
Thanks for having us. This was great.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Okay, we all know that heavy metal shows can get out of hand. I keep to the back of the club and stay out of the pit. But 100 years ago, if you attended the legendary premiere of this piece, you could have gotten roughed up pretty good. On May 29th, Soundcheck and Q2 Music are marking the 100th anniversary of Stravinsky's controversial riot-inducing masterpiece with an event we're calling The Rite of Spring Goes Solo. No orchestra, no ballet, just a solo piano played by Vicky Chow of the Bang on a Can All-Stars. I'll host that, and I'll be joined by WNYC's Sarah Fishko, who produced our recent special Culture Shock 1913. That's The Rite of Spring for solo piano, May 29th, 7 p.m. It's the actual 100th anniversary. For tickets, go to thegreenspace.org. Up next, it's Creed on Creed. Creed Bratton of the NBC sitcom The Office evaluates a grunge band called Creed. Next on Soundcheck.